Tasting Australia happens every couple of years or so in Adelaide. It's a mega food festival, demonstrations, talks, debates, award ceremonies, with guest cooks from all over the world. But when I went there a couple of weeks ago, somebody I really wanted to talk to was a butcher from Perth. Italian-born Vince Gareffa owns and operates a gourmet butchery called Mondo di Carne. He spends a lot of his time teaching, cooking, broadcasting, writing recipes. And he's been in the business 46 years, and it has been a very varied career. Vince Gareffa.
I suppose when I look back at my career, I found right from the word go that it was something that when you serve people and you keep them happy, there is an immense glow inside your body of being worthwhile. If I'm not careful, I'll get emotional because as a young kid, I didn't have a lot of self-confidence. When I became butcher and started to serve people and put away special cuts for them and trim things the right way and take the time. Remember, everything was by hand in those days. There was no really overuse of bandsaws. Everything was cut with the knife or with the cleaver. And I just got this incredible joy out of people being happy. And this moved on to start to look, what else can I do to excite them? So I started to work at night in restaurants because we were so poor, washing dishes. And the washing dishes moved to cooking at the grill. And the more I learnt about cooking and passed that on to my customers at the butcher shop, the more I seemed to get pats on the back. I suppose when you look at my business today, we retail, we wholesale, we export. Small family business, but niche market. We've arranged farmers from free range, organic, biodynamic. 25 years ago, when people weren't even interested, so to speak, you know, it was very niche markets. And we've nurtured those families and they've grown with us. I run cooking classes for the last 25, 26 years. I run catering. I suppose I've always tried to keep myself excited, and that's rubbed off onto the customers. I'm still getting a buzz every time I make someone happy.
You're dealing with a product from the beef industry and from the lamb industry and the pork industry. How do you see the state of these industries in Australia at the moment? Do you see any problems?
I've always been concerned that the industries that we're talking about now haven't always had their eyes fully open for the future. Too many times they're only working on now. And if 20 years ago people were starting to talk, as I was and others were, we're worried about what's in the food chain, what our kids are eating, what our grandkids are going to be eating. I could see that there needed to be some changes in the way we accept the modern technology that came into our industry. So we used to grow a lot of things just naturally and have a lot of inherent problems because of that. So some of the meat would be dark, some of the meat would be tough, some of the meat wouldn't be all the same size. So along come a little bit of injection of science, and people are starting to grain feed to perfection. And you're getting 12 eggs in a basket that are all the same size. Now that was exciting for a little while. The same thing happened to our tomatoes and to our apples and to our pears. But the longer that I got involved in this, the more I realised, look, it's all very nice to be pretty, but we need to be natural. And we need to eat that apple off the tree when it's ripe, not stored for 6 months. We need to eat the meat and have a happy chew, not turn around and expect it to be butter. And hormones have embarrassed me in this industry from the point of view that they were banned in chickens in the 70s, yet in the beef production in this country, Alan, I would love something to be done about it. Anything from 60 to 80% of the beef grown in this country is hormone assisted. I think that is disgraceful. Our clients overseas won't accept it. So if we get an order from the big boys, Japan or America, they want clean food. They don't want any chemical residues, nothing. Yet within our own country, we're allowed to use it to get something that looks a better colour, that looks a better size. And so for that, I think the industries are in trouble. Those ones that don't change now, tomorrow won't have the orders coming through.
Is there also a problem with beef? I mean, I have heard that the amount of grass feeding that happens in this country makes it difficult to export because it leads to an inconsistency of product.
Well, let me tell you that if you're a true lover of animal welfare and a true lover of wanting to eat nothing but the best naturally, grass feeding is the way to go. It will give us some inconsistencies, but they're inconsistencies that we can fall in love with. We can turn around and look at grass-fed cattle as being the best for us. We can turn around and enjoy them at certain months of the year from one area, certain months of the year from another. Grain feeding is an unnatural act. The way that the cattle are fed in that fashion, the way they stand still, the way that they don't move around, especially if they're housed in large sheds, one gets sick, they all get sick. So what happens? To protect them from that, they automatically introduce growth-promoting antibiotics into the feed as a natural form of controls. So again, more chemicals. We have to learn that things are natural. We do have to put up with the fact that something is going to be a little bit leaner, a little bit tougher. But if you have the right cooking styles, chefs for years have been taking animals out of the wild and turning them into delectable dishes because they knew what they had their hands on. They knew that this venison was wild or lean or tough or whatever, and they adjusted their cooking times according to it. So when you've got stunning grass-fed animals, and all the top chefs around the world are waking up to that. If you remember, there was that chef in France who was so disgusted with the mad cow issue that he gave up serving meat and went to totally vegetarian. Chefs are starting to have consciences, and I think that that is our protection. If chefs start to care what happens to the food before they get it, before they serve it to us, we have got a chance. But we have to be more vocal as consumers to let them know that we're happy with their interference and complaints.
You talked about animals in the wild. Do you sell kangaroo?
Absolutely. Probably the only genuine free-range animal left in the world, because everything else is now being farmed. We fell in love with wild venison and it became farmed venison. We fell in love with wild ostrich, it became farmed ostrich. You name it, wild buffalo became farmed buffalo. But kangaroos cannot be farmed. They cannot be led to an abattoir. So they're shot in the wild, immediate death, which means no tough meat. I've never met a piece of kangaroo that let me down for tenderness.
No tough meat because the animal dies suddenly, there's no stress, so there's no release of adrenaline into the muscular and tissue.
Absolutely. That is a huge difference. All of my small organic growers, they deliver to a little abattoir that probably only does about 100 animals a week compared to the big abattoirs that do up to 800 a day. When animals go to an abattoir, they can smell the death in the air. They start to get upset. And so when something goes to a smaller abattoir, it only even has to be, let's just say, a grade 2 animal. It will perform better than a grade 1 animal going to a large abattoir. And when the old farmer used to go out the back and pick out an old wether and shoot it and process it that night under a tree, he had some meat that he felt that he couldn't sell because it was second grade, but the family ate like kings because it was so placid and happy when it died. Beautiful meat.
What do you see as the future for your industry? What future trends can you see just over the horizon?
I think that we're getting back to wanting fat back into our diets and in our products. Things like Berkshire pork, the acceptance of Wagyu meat because of the fact that it is well marbled, extremely tasty and tender, and the fat is the right types of fat that are good for our diet.
Perhaps you should explain for some listeners exactly what Wagyu beef is.
Wagyu beef is the nationally heritage listed breed of cattle from Japan. They made a mistake back in the 1950s of actually opening it up for export for about 12 months. Once they realised their mistake, it was too late. Cows and bulls had gone off to America. During the 1960s, we were able to get some of that breeding stock into Australia. In the 80s, when they had mad cow around the world, the Wagyu that the Japanese were used to eating, highly marbled meat, very high in omega-3s and omega-6s, very rich, only small portions needed, and you burn up that beautiful fat like energy. It's just magnificent. And it's without doubt the only meat that I've ever tried in my 46 years of this industry that lived up to the hype that I'd heard beforehand. It's not just the good cuts. Eating some shin beef from Wagyu, some ox cheek from Wagyu, is just a tenderness experience that with no other. The Japanese were so sorry to have lost it. We got our hands on it. When America was banned from supplying Japan because of mad cow disease, Australia jumped in, and we have got such a big Wagyu industry throughout this country that everybody's involved. And now that America is back into Japan, the prices have dropped. And so Australia is supplying Wagyu beef to its own consumers at prices that we can afford, not $1,000 like you pay in Japan, but around about $50 to $100 that we're paying here. And it's made us appreciate all the other meats we've got in this country. Around the world when I travel, as long as it's got the logo Australia, the world wants it. We're seen as the cleanest island, and I hope that we never ever lose that status.
Details of Tasting Australia and a link to Vince Gareffa's company Mondo Di Carne on our website abc.net.au/rn/bydesign. Coming up next on By Design, trends and products.